2 o'clock hour, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Monday. We've talked a lot of Chris Johnson today, and we're going to continue that discussion with John McClain now down in Houston. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm watching Brazil just beat Japan 2-1 in stoppage. You know, Nick told me Japan had been based there and how great the fans were and the players were for everybody in the area. But, boy, the crowd certainly here is pro-Brazil. They got what they wanted, but what a match.
Are you there or are you just watching on TV?
No. If I was there, it'd be a little louder.
That's what I thought. I was about to be like, wait a minute. How did John pull that off?
Yeah, I passed up all those offers I got for free tickets so I could make sure and be ready for you guys.
Well, we're glad that you're here. You know, the news comes out that Chris Johnson has ALS, and you saw it on the other side because a lot of those big moments for the Titans were against the Texans, whether it's a run or a pass. But obviously, we just had Jeff Fisher on, one of the most dynamic players that this franchise has ever had, and obviously hated to hear that news. But what do you remember about watching Chris Johnson?
Well, first of all, when he called I thought it was a news conference. He had some kind of announcement. And I'm thinking, well, I don't think he's running for office anywhere. I hope that he doesn't have a disease. And the first thing I thought about was cancer.
Yeah.
And then to talk to Michael Strahan about how an ALS, I've seen ALS here up close. Glenn Montgomery, who played defensive tackle for the Oilers during the years when they were so good, going to the playoffs 7 years in a row and having that choke job in Buffalo and then blowing a great season with Buddy Ryan as defensive coordinator in 93. He was a terrific player. And O.J. Begantz, who went to Rice and is from here and lived with ALS for years and did more work mainly because he lived so long. And, of course, every new thing that they could come up with, and the Ravens made sure he had everything he wanted, and then they hired him. And they had two people that took care of him and dressed him every day and made sure he got to work. And he communicated through the computer where, you know, his eyes would write his words and they'd be spoken. I remember doing a story on them, and then a friend of mine named Stephen Rocket Rosen, an attorney, I spoke at his funeral here. He died of ALS. And you think about the disease itself, that they can't find a cure. And, you know, we had that ice bucket challenge.
Yep.
That was about ALS. So, you know, Lou Gehrig, I think, was at 39. And we still can't find anywhere in the world a cure for ALS, and I saw that Chris is undergoing experimental drugs and testing, and maybe a miracle it'll help him, but it is such an insidious disease. And I'm guessing, like, you know, I didn't seem like you guys did, but first thing I think about Chris Johnson was speed, and I think about the 2,000-yard season because they're still rare now that they're playing an extra game. And at some point, there will be 18 games, and even though the running game has been diminished from what it used to be, at some point, we'll have another 2,000-yard rusher, but it won't mean what it did when Chris Johnson did it in 16 games, just like O.J. Simpson was the first to do it, and he did it in 14-game seasons. So that's what I think about playing on really good teams, the explosiveness. I know the Texans players, every time they were playing the Titans during that era, they talked about stopping, containing Chris Johnson and not letting him score on any long runs, which he was so good at. And that was the first thing they tried to build a game plan around.
John, the first time you saw him, I was here when he got drafted, and nobody knew who he was coming out of East Carolina. I had to call Greenville, North Carolina, and get some video of him. They sent me what he did in the Hawaii Bowl that year, which was just nobody could stop him. And then he comes here, and, of course, he has the great first year. Your memories of that first time seeing him? And what I like about this, John, is that Chris comes into the league, and there had never been anybody kind of quite like that, right? Do you know anybody that was kind of like his running style and how fast he was, as explosive? Was there any kind of person that came to your mind when you thought about Chris Johnson that first year?
Well, not, you know, Barry Sanders had incredible speed and was the greatest breakaway running back I've seen. Gale Sayers was, but Gale Sayers blew out his knee, but had 20 touchdowns as a rookie. And so many of them were long distance, but he played on such bad surfaces at Wrigley Field. A lot of times it was muddy, so you didn't get to appreciate the speed and the explosiveness and the acceleration and the breakaway ability that you did with, like, Barry Sanders, who played indoor on AstroTurf, and then Chris Johnson, who was as good as it has ever been when it came to long distance running. And so I don't know. Yeah, I guess at some point we'll see another guy like that who's not overly big, but is tough and can get yards any way possible. But you got to worry about him going the distance every time he touches the ball. And, of course, you don't want him getting around a corner. And they didn't want him breaking through the initial, getting out of the second level is what they always talked about here. We could not let Chris Johnson get on the second level, which means we got to make sure the gaps are filled, that you've got discipline, you set the edges, because if he gets onto the second level because he's got so many moves and he can break tackles, then he's gone.
John, Chris issued a statement on Instagram about 2 hours ago, just what he's going through. And part of that, he talks about the NFL and CTE and ALS and how players are, the research is showing they're 4 times more susceptible to get ALS. Do you think today, and I don't want you to speak for the league, but I know they know what's going on, but I think today they took another notice, right, of ALS in football?
Yeah, but I don't think that'll diminish football at all. When the movie Concussion came out and the linebacker from the 49ers retired and everybody said he'd be the first of many and parents won't let their kids play football anymore. I mean, we know right now that CTE, what CTE can do.
Right.
Too many great players who committed suicide, have their brains have been donated and it's discovered they had CTE. The only way I could ever see football diminished is if somehow they had found tests for CTE while a player, say you're at the combine and you're getting all kind of tests, and they had tests for CTE, number one, the NFL wouldn't want to find that out because that would destroy the game more than anything, is if they had those tests while they were not just alive, but while they were playing early in their career. Someday somebody may find that out, but there's a lot of money at stake. You can imagine if they found a test like that and all of a sudden they tell a kid at the combine, well, we need to see your doctor because you've got oncoming CTE and here's what happens. And I think that would end the game.
Do you think is Chris Johnson, in your mind, Ring of Honor worthy for the Titans?
Well, I would certainly think so. I haven't. How many people are in the Ring of Honor? 16, something like that?
Yeah, they just – I mean, if you include Mike Keith and Dave McGinnis, who they've just put in, Floyd and Jeff, Steve, Eddie, Wycheck. There's not – I mean, those are the only ones from the Titans era that I can think of.
So Steve and Eddie and Frank and are they the only players?
I think that's right. Well, Bruce, I mean, but he's a Hall of Famer,
Bruce,
so he's he's in.
Well, Bruce played his last 5 years there. I think he had 14 here. But, you know, you guys saw him on a regular basis. You guys would know that more than I did. Did he play 6 years for the Titans?
Chris Johnson?
Seven years.
Seven, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but when I think about that 2,000-yard season, I would say yes. But when you tell me those three names of Eddie and Frank and Steve, all of whom began their careers here, he don't think Chris Johnson was as productive for as long as they were. But it depends on what the criteria are and who's doing the voting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just pulled the list up. The Titans players are Steve, Eddie, Frank, Bruce, and then Floyd and Jeff, and then they've put Mike Keith in as the announcer, and then same with Dave McGinnis. He's going in this year. So the rest are Oilers.
Do we know what yet? What game that McGinnis will be inducted?
I haven't heard yet. I don't know if they've said that.
They may not have. Boy, that's going to be a big deal when Dave's name's up on the big walls.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that, you know, and I said this earlier of maybe they've had plans that they just haven't announced yet, but, you know, that you announce, like, there are some guys from the Titans era that I'd like to see find their place in the Ring of Honor before this stadium closes, because this is the stadium that they did everything at. So I'm wondering with the last year if they come up with something like that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see all what they do when they play the first game in the new stadium. You know, they get to bring back all the players from the Ring of Honor, the Hall of Famers. You know, they'll do something really big. I can't wait to see what it is. And there'll be somebody who will be the first inductee, maybe more than one, in the new stadium.
Bud's rule on retiring numbers was Hall of Fame until Amy made an exception for Steve McNair and Eddie George, right?
Yeah, I think that's great. I don't think you had to be in the Hall of Fame to get in the Ring of Honor.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next. Chase and Big Joe here on 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Monday, continuing with John McClain. John, when I saw this, I knew I had to bring it up to you, but with the new Bills Stadium, they are not going to include O.J. Simpson in that Wall of Fame or whatever they call it. I certainly, you know, can't sit here and argue, you know, the decision or why they would think that way. But a lot of people upset about it. What's your thoughts on how you continue to, I guess, look at his football career with trying to separate the personal stuff?
First of all, if O.J., who brutally killed two people, if he came up for the Hall of Fame today and our bylaws say we cannot take into consideration of what happens off the field, I would either would demand, and I'm sure others would, need to change the bylaws. You know, you cannot have somebody that, and I commend the Bills, any nincompoops that say he should be in there despite killing two people, unless they're morons and they think he didn't. You know, that's, I don't know how you could possibly justify it. So I hope the Bills get a lot of praise for keeping him out of that stadium.
Would you ever see a day where, like you said, bylaws and things change where he could be expelled from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or do you not see that happening?
Chase, I can't say for sure no. There is a player, Jim Tyre, who was a great offensive tackle for the Chiefs, would have been in as the first ballot selectee. But he killed his wife and I think his son, and then himself, and then they found out he had CTE. And the family, her family, understands it, and they have written us asking us if we will put him in the Hall of Fame. And so we're not supposed to consider that. But he's come up a couple of times, and he doesn't get in. And obviously some of the voters are considering it, even though they shouldn't, because that's not the bylaws. But I can't say it's never going to happen, that O.J. would get kicked out of the Hall of Fame. Then there'd be people like, well, y'all got other scumbags in there. Well, I don't think we have as many people that murdered, some people in there murdered two people and was proven guilty. Even though he got off in the court, he still had the civil case against him. And so I'm just glad the Bills are not doing it. I hate to see that there's any controversy.
Well, John, last week the tight end university was held here in Nashville. It's just a, basically a big old party for all the tight ends to get together, right?
I thought you'd be there covering.
No, I'll pass. I'll get him next time around. I was curious because they were talking about Tony Gonzalez was there, and somebody's like, well, that's the greatest tight end of all time. And I love the discussion, and I couldn't wait to ask you. You've seen so much, and that position has evolved so much from the 60s to where we are now. But in your mind, and I know the tight end award in college is named after John Mackey, and it's a shame more don't know how great of a player he was. Should these guys know more about a guy like John Mackey if they're playing that position and want to be considered in that eliteness what those are? But in your mind, who was the greatest tight end that's ever played football?
Well, first of all, and that's, boy, that is a great observation and a great question, Joe. You have the information at your fingertips. I thought that at the first of all, in the old days, tight ends played on the line of scrimmage like they were an extra lineman, and they had to block for the running game because pro football was basically a running game. And then if the guy could actually run pass routes and catch the ball, that was even better. Mike Ditka was the first, and John Mackey was the second, and both of them are in the Hall of Fame. And Dickey also, Ditka could break tackles because he was so tough. And Mackey was the first one that I saw who blocked on the line of scrimmage and caught, and he had good speed. And to me, the greatest tight end I've ever seen is Rob Gronkowski because he could line up in the slot. He could line up wide. He could line up on the line of scrimmage. And because Gronk was so big and liked contact, he could block. Now, they didn't require it a lot, but when they did, he didn't just make an effort. He did it. Tony Gonzalez was a great receiver, and there's been other guys who've been great receivers. But if I had to say the best I've ever seen and doing both, it was Gronk. Now, he was fortunate to play with the greatest quarterback in history. But, boy, if people would Google Mike Ditka and John Mackey and watch the highlights of their career, they would be amazed. I know when the Giants won their first Super Bowl with Mark Bavaro, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he'll get in the Hall of Fame. But during that short period, he could catch. He could catch over the middle, and he was a ferocious blocker.
Your thoughts on Frank Wycheck? I know. Do you consider an H-back a tight end, John?
Well, yeah, they were H-backs. A hybrid tight end and a hybrid fullback. And that's what Frank was. Frank wasn't a true tight end, got on the line of scrimmage and hit people. But he was a really good receiver. He could catch the ball all over the field. He was tough, but he was not a great blocker. But he wasn't asked to block a lot. Although he got to make an effort because he had Eddie George, one of the all-time best running backs, to block for. So an H-back, which they used to call him, I don't think they call him H-backs
right
anymore. I do. I call it like it's an H-back role and then explain a hybrid between a tight end and a fullback. Now so many of them are hybrids between a wide receiver. We see these guys coming in the NFL at 245 pounds. And they're like 6'4", 6'5". Well, those are like big receivers. Really good tight ends who can block on the line of scrimmage are going to be 255 to 265. And if you see like Ricard, not Ricard, he's the fullback. They're the tight end, can't remember which one I'm talking about, used to be so physical. And Ricard of the Ravens, I guess he's still with the Ravens, he's the biggest, toughest, meanest fullback I've ever seen. Him and Juszczyk, who was with the 49ers for so many years. But those guys, they could never move out and catch the ball, but actually be weapons.
Wasn't it fun, though? You go from the run and shoot, run and shoot, run and shoot, and then in 95, it's like, oh, there's number 89, a tight end or H-back, leading the Oilers in receptions, and this would not have happened years prior to that.
Now, I'll tell you a story about that. When Steve McNair was a rookie, let's see, that was 95, and Heath Shuler had come in 93. So they wanted the Oilers to come play the Redskins in Knoxville. And so the Oilers went early and practiced against the Redskins in Maryville. And I'd never been there. And I remember sitting in the stands one day with Charlie Gashly, who was the general manager of the Redskins. And I knew Charlie. And I'm looking, and he's saying, "Hey, watch this kid here. Watch this." I said, "What's his name?" And he said, "Wycheck." I said, "Never heard of him." He's a kid from Maryland. He said, we got high hopes for him. So I said, "Well, good." And I may have told Floyd that.
Oh, interesting. John, thanks so much as always. Have a happy 4th, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Condolences to all of Chris Johnson's fans there, and, of course, Chris Johnson and his family. Thank you.
John McClain joining us here on the program as he does every Monday at 2 o'clock, and always appreciate that. We'll have more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.